are listening to the Stillbirth Matters podcast presented by the Star Legacy Foundation, a national nonprofit founded on the belief that every pregnancy deserves a happy ending. If you enjoy listening to this podcast, please consider visiting starlegacyfoundation.org and make a donation of any amount. With Father's Day coming up soon, we thought it would be appropriate to feature a lost dad on the podcast. That's why our guest for this episode is Jay Watson. Jay lives in Minnesota with his wife Crystal and son. He is also the father of Kainoa Mark, who was born still in September of 2017. Well, Jay, thank you for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
My first question for you, just so everyone becomes familiar with you, is to tell us about your family.
Yeah, absolutely. So my partner, Crystal, and I, we met at Arizona State University, and we've been married since 2009. We have a living son who was born in 2014, and our second son, Kainoa, was stillborn due to an umbilical cord accident on September 24th, 2017, at 35 weeks gestation. Kainoa was conceived via frozen embryo transfer, so we've traveled the road of miscarriage and fertility treatments before and after Kainoa passed away, unfortunately.
I think the main reason we wanted to talk to you today is because we have Father's Day coming up, which you and I both know that that holiday means something a lot different than it for guys like us than it does to other men who have not experienced challenges and loss. And I think it's an important time to think about fathers who are often seen as the secondary parent because they're not going through the physical aspects. We don't carry the baby ourselves. How do you feel your experience was different from your wife's?
Well, it was significantly different. I mean, we of course shared a lot of the same experiences, but like you mentioned, a father and a spouse and whatnot carrying the child, you know, there's not as much of the physical connection, of course. I'd say, in addition to just the physical piece, my wife and I were different. We have different relationships. We have different relationships with family, with friends. We engage differently in relationships. We have a different style when it comes to, how we like to communicate, how we like to interact with friends and family. So, as far as, the experience of the pregnancy, we had a normal pregnancy, a healthy pregnancy. And, after Kainoa passed away, I think, some of the differences in our lives started to shine through where, I'd say I have probably a smaller group of close friends and family, whereas Crystal has a larger one. And as we all know, that support structure is really important after loss and through grief. And so in addition to, just getting through the first few days and weeks, it was interesting to see how our support networks came through differently as for a father and for a mother and, even thinking about supporting our living son and how our approach to parenting and how our extended family members and close family members reached out to support us. I mean, there were certainly quite a few differences. Social media is part of that, and I'd say, kind of admittedly, I'm not on social media as much as others, and certainly my wife's more connected, and that's been a great platform for her to kind of share more about what she's gone through and going through, and have been able to connect with other lost parents and folks who have lost children to stillbirth, and I've done some of that on my own as well, but I think that's where, there's differences between us and how we process because of who we are, but there's certainly the kind of male and female aspects that have come through as well.
When you think about Father's Day, do you look forward to it? Do you dread it? Are you emotionally neutral about it? How are you feeling about this holiday?
Yeah, no, great question. I'd say the first Father's Day, it was really kind of more dread. Right. I mean, it's something I wanted to celebrate because I am a father. I was when our first was born in 2014. And since then, I am a father to Kainoa, so that's kind of a novel concept for a lot of folks that maybe haven't experienced the loss of a child. We still parent Kainoa in a lot of ways, and that's an important way of, that's an important part of our path forward as a family. But that first year was really tough, and we made an effort to, like, get away. A change of scenery was important. Gave us an excuse not to attend kind of the family traditions and family events and celebrations around Father's Day. And so that first year, I'd say, was pretty tough. Last year, this year, not as much dread. I think, you know, more celebration, more focus on the love that I have for both of my sons as a father, and the way that I parent each of them. So it's gotten easier over time, but certainly very tough in the first year.
And you and I met Father's Day of 2019, where we met with a group of five or six other lost dads, all from Minnesota, and we ran a loop around about a 5K loop around a lake in Minneapolis, pushing empty strollers with signs in the strollers that said "Running in memory of," and then insert your baby's name here. And I'm wondering if you can just kind of describe to the audience what that was like for you. I know what that was like for me. It was really uncomfortable at first, but then I felt really good after it was over, because we were on a lake that's well populated with walkers and people going past us. And I'm wondering if you can take us back about what your state of mind was that day.
Yeah, I think I was filled with a mix of emotions. I think it was, like you said, kind of a little bit nerve-wracking in the beginning, not knowing really what to expect. Certainly our culture and society doesn't do great with death and hard conversations, and so to put it right out there and put it in front of people's faces with empty strollers was something that I wasn't sure what would happen. I remember that when we were convening just before we got started, there's been comments made to a number of the dads kind of jokingly, "Hey, you lost your baby," or "You missed your baby," for folks that just had no idea what we were doing. And just reinforce the point that, yes, we need people to be more aware that infant loss, pregnancy loss is a real thing, and a real thing that both the mother and the father struggle with. And so, you know, before we even got started, there was, confirmation that it was the right thing to do. And then I think as we ran around the lake and passed by folks, I think initially they'd kind of smile, "Oh, there's five or six dads pushing strollers." And then they would see that they were empty. And then they would look at the little placards, in memory signs. And I don't know really what a lot of them thought. It was kind of probably a little bit of shock, surprise. And I think it's exactly what we set out to do, to try and raise awareness, to try and shed some light on loss and stillbirth specifically, and, fellowship with other fathers that have gone through trauma and loss and grief. And, I remember at the end of the run, just feeling in a much better place before then when we started. I had made some additional connections to fathers, other dads. We talked about doing it again, and like we discussed, this year in the external environment with COVID makes that probably a little bit more challenging, but it's an important component of driving awareness, and specifically on Father's Day, because I think many of us have experienced, there's a different kind of expectation for maybe the quote-unquote secondary parent or spouse or father in the relationship, and maybe how they should be managing through grief or the situation or parenting. So it was a great experience, a great event, and hopefully we'll have the chance to do it again in the future.
That's a great segue to my next question, because that day we made people uncomfortable, and we kind of flipped the script on the societal norms of pregnancy. And I know a lot of dads often talk about societal pressures, stigmas, and expectations that surround pregnancy and infant loss. Some are directly said, but others are implied. Did you feel any of these external pressures? And if so, how did you handle them?
Yeah, no, I definitely did. And I think, societal, cultural pressures, being male and being, a supportive partner, I think a lot of the expectation was that, you know, I'd be the strong rock and that, you know, I would quickly get over it or find ways to kind of maintain but suppress a lot of my feelings and emotions so that I could be there for my family, and not only for my spouse, but for our living son as well. And that's tough because that manifested itself in ways where, you know, people would hear about Kaino and our loss, and they wouldn't ask about me, they would ask about Crystal. And, you know, in a lot of ways it felt isolating. It felt like there wasn't an acknowledgement of my loss and the loss of for our whole family. And so, you know, that coupled with, you know, after some time went by, just this kind of understanding from those around, or our understanding from the from interpreting questions or comments from those around us, that there is this belief that we were like, we needed to like move on and get past it. And it's, you know, that thing happened to you. Well, no, it's something that is happening to us for the rest of our lives. This grief and this child, we carry until the day that we die. And so I think that's what's been tough, is this belief that it's something in the past. It's that we can kind of move on, you know, that concept of moving on. And I try to really avoid saying that, because that's not what it is about at all. It's about kind of pressing through, you know, moving forward, because we'll carry Kainoa and, you know, the life that we had planned for and hoped for the rest of our lives.
I want to talk about work for a little bit, because going back to work after a loss is a significant milestone for many parents. A lot of people have vivid memories of what it was like going back to work and trying to find importance in the things that you used to find important, but just don't seem that important anymore. What was your return to work like?
Yeah, it was tough, to put it bluntly. I mean, I think, so one, I took 2 weeks off and feel very fortunate that I was able to do so. I know others who have experienced loss, you know, don't have as much flexibility with their employer or work environment. And so I was able to spend some time kind of hunkered down with my immediate family, figuring out how to take advantage of the support that was offered, to get us through that really, really tough time in the beginning. Going back to work, I think the thing that I would say is I felt like a completely different person going back to work, but yet the people at work didn't see a different person. I went to the same meetings, I went to the same desk, I went to the same lunchroom, cafeteria. I work at a large Fortune 500 company, so there's lots of people that I interact with. I've been there for almost 14 years, so there's lots of relationships that I've built over time, and it felt like those folks didn't really know me anymore. There's something so significant that impacted my life, but didn't impact my work life. I didn't show up physically as a different person, but inside I was very much a changed father and spouse and, you know, friend and employee in a lot of ways. And so that's where I realized pretty early on that I would need to kind of openly share and be vulnerable and kind of lead conversation courageously to find ways to incorporate Kainoa and talk about our grief journey, talk about our son, talk about things that we are experiencing kind of live. And this was a conscious decision we made as a family, because we knew that the alternative would be really isolating. If people don't really know where we're at, how we're evolving and changing, they're not really going to know how to best support us or to kind of understand who we are and continue relationship with us. So one of the things that I did that I think was really helpful was I wrote an email and sent it out to all my colleagues at work and just told them about Kainoa, shared what happened, and invited them to more or less like join me in the journey ahead And I remember sharing that I really would appreciate that colleagues ask questions, ask about what happened, ask about how I'm doing, ask about Kainoa, because it shows that they, care for us and love our family and love both of our sons. And some, took me up on that invitation, and really surprising individuals, some that I didn't expect, that just, saw it as an opportunity for some real connection and to support, a grieving person and family. And those relationships have changed as a result. But it started with the conscious decision to insert something that's uncomfortable, but something that gives folks a window into to see who we are and how we're changing, and how Kainoa's life is given us a new sense of purpose as a family. So being really open and sharing about our family, and talking about Kainoa regularly at work. And sometimes I don't do it as often, but other times I do. It's an important part of the work environment that I've created now. And it's probably not for everyone. I understand that we all process differently, and some maybe aren't as comfortable being as open. But that's been a key part of my close working relationships with my team, and people that I work on projects with, that I share who I am, my family, and what it's meant to us, and how it's changed our perspective and outlook on things.
I love that you were proactive in sharing with your very many colleagues how they can be a part of your journey, and giving them permission to ask you questions, as opposed to just sitting back and doing nothing about it. Because your life before September of 2017 was much different after September of 2017, and you acknowledged that. I'm wondering, in reaching out to your coworkers, and did you also mention that you presented to your coworkers as well?
Yeah, so the first kind of, I'd say, real leap into vulnerability was that email. And I remember the feeling after I had sent it off. It's just like nothing I've ever experienced before, because I think I sent it to almost 200 people. And some, were close colleagues, but some were just folks that I knew I would see, and I knew that I wanted them to know. I remember that feeling, just, oh, like I just shared something so personal, and I shared it with a bunch of people, right? So initially, I kind of had second thoughts, but I'm so thankful I did it now. And then what you're referencing is something that I did actually just this past October. And during Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month, I had the opportunity to share with a group at General Mills at a leadership conference a breakthrough story. And part of my breakthrough story was about, how I approach my professional work and approach it in a very vulnerable way, where I just, if I work with somebody, I tell them what they should know about me versus them trying to interpret who I am. But the personal piece of that story was sharing Kainoa and how he's and how the experience and grief and love that we have for him has changed who we are, and all the beautiful things that have come from experiencing stillbirth and infertility and secondary loss, which is a whole other topic, but loss after Kainoa passed away. And so I had the opportunity to do that in front of a large group, to share very, very vulnerably, like what it's meant, and as a breakthrough, really, in that this gift, really, of perspective on life is something that I wanted people to know, and hear from me, and how it's shaped our lives. But part of that was to also say, hey, this is a group of leaders that I maybe didn't all have on the email thread and communication from, a couple of years prior. I want them to see me. And because in a lot of ways, without people understanding my family and our sons, it feels a little bit like you're wearing a mask around, like people don't get to see the real you. And without that invitation and without that kind of vulnerability, we miss out on opportunities for a really meaningful connection and relationship. And so that's really what I strive for now, is to give myself as many opportunities for real connection and relationship. And it requires courage in a lot of ways, because it was tough to do. But what I've seen is that it's really been an invitation for others to share, which has been really beautiful, right? I mean, when I first shared the email, you know, maybe a week after we lost Kainoa, I had a couple responses back that of folks that shared some sort of pregnancy and infant loss story of their own, whether it be their own journey, whether it be a sibling of theirs that their parents really never spoke about, that was a stillbirth, or you know, a number of miscarriages. And so it again was this opportunity to connect, and from that there's been something to build upon that I never would have known in these relationships if there wasn't this desire to kind of lead in that way and share. And it's not easy, and again, it's probably not right for everyone, but I think it's been really beautiful in a lot of ways too.
Whenever people make a courageous and vulnerable outreach, such as what you did with your coworkers, you kind of learn a lot about people and how they respond to it. And I'm just curious if you have any regrets about doing what you did at work.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the regrets is just maybe more of a tactical decision that I made. So I shared the story, and then there was a kind of a happy hour later on, and I had volunteered to serve food at the happy hour. So right after I had laid it all out there, I saw every single one of these people in line because I was serving food. And you can imagine what their, you know, what they said when they came up to me. Oh my gosh, thanks so much for sharing your story, and like, oh, how powerful, and you know, I'm sorry, or you know, you have beautiful boys. And that was great to hear, and there were a lot of nice comments, but it was like 200 people, and I just didn't have the emotional bank account left really to get, I got through it, but it was really, really difficult. So I regretted, you know, putting myself in that situation after exposing myself, you know, for lack of better words. And I think the message from that is, you know, we have to be careful and safe with ourselves to know like what we can handle and what's maybe a little bit too much. And that was, you know, a little bit of a miss in judgment and understanding like what I'd be capable of that day, because it was already a pretty big moment, a pretty big drain on my energy and emotional bank account with just the sharing during the conference, but to have that after. But I'd say beyond that, you know, that it's been mostly good. You know, I walk around, and if I see these people and they've never mentioned anything about it, I just know that they see me now. They see who I am. They know who I am. They know that I care, that I've grieved deeply. It's because I love deeply my family, including our son that's passed away. And so I just feel so much more content knowing that more people in the building that I see really see who I am and know more about our journey.
You and I are 2.5 years and 4.5 years respectively out from our losses, which unfortunately makes us grizzled veterans of this terrible, terrible world that we live in. And I'm curious, and this is fresh topic for me, because last night I was at my former coworker's house. He and his wife lost their baby, who was stillborn just last week, 8 days ago. And wow. I sat with them until almost midnight last night, and I almost forgot. I saw the look in their eyes, the shock, the sadness, the I cannot believe this happened to us. The anger, the sadness, everything mixed in, and I just saw that exhausted, shocked, sad cocktail look in their eyes that I forgot that I had that in my eyes for a couple of months. So that's all fresh in my mind, but I'm wondering, if there's any dads listening to this podcast episode who are early in their grief journey, earlier than you and I are, what suggestions, what advice do you have for those fathers?
Yeah, I mean, it's come through earlier in this conversation, but to the extent you're willing to have the energy to do so, I think the main suggestion I would share is just to be open and honest, and you don't have to lay it all out and you know, be completely vulnerable and you know, share everything that's happening with everybody, but to be selective and for the relationships that really matter, or you believe will really matter, to be really honest with those folks so that they can understand where you are. I think that's one thing that I think I probably would have done a little bit differently, especially with close family and friends. I did it with some, but not everyone, just to keep them really up to speed and where I was at emotionally, you know, what I was struggling with. And I say I regret it a bit, because putting myself in their shoes, how can they support me if they don't know what I need? Or how can they support me if they don't know where I am? Or how I'm changing, how I'm struggling with going back to work, you know, where I was able to share more, I'd say, and not in all situations, but in many of them, you know, I got better support, because it wasn't, you know, this giant unknown of like, well, how do I support Jay? I want to help him, but I don't know how. And, you know, so, you know, demystifying it a bit in the process for that was just helping people to understand what was going on. Then I think they picked up on opportunities to, you know, deliver a meal or to send us a gift card or to just let us vent on the phone. You know,